For December the 4th, 2015, it's level 129. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Dave Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Yeah, so we've got a pretty cool show this week. I was just about to say, like, we should do this more often, where we record a bunch of show before we start the show, because like I feel punchy and I've got more energy, and then I say, oh, we got a great show this week, and the only response I get is,
Well, we've already done half of it.
Boys, howdy, it's Spiffalificus.
It's like, oh, you know, like we can just get right into it. I don't have to tell this horrible story or give a beer review of this god awful Leinenkugel's cranberry ginger shandy.
Oh, why did you do that?
What?
Get one of those.
It's the season of disappointment.
Well, no. I was like, okay,
can we call it a crandy?
So I think Leinenkugel's getting a little bit cocky, as it were, with their summer shandy.
They're getting real confident.
Yeah, they're getting real confident. And I'm walking down the aisle, and I'm gonna pick up my usual like a Rheingeist or something like that. And I see a six pack of, oh, I like cranberry, I like ginger, but you know what I don't like? A bunch of sugar, which is in this. So, womp. Oh, well, but I'm finishing
the
last one.
Wait, is there
one.
A bunch of sugar in all beer?
Like malt sugar, but not like something that tastes like lemonade or cranberry juice or something. Yeah, but I don't have to do that because we have a cool show. It's going to be a bit unusual. It's not one of the normal three and done or whatever. We've got an interview that we're doing. It's been a while since this crew has done one. Jala and John did the one with the Leviathan, but this time we're talking with the creator of a game that's coming out called Two Ash.
Mm-hmm.
Again with the uh-huh.
I don't know how to...
How to say
it's a love letter to a Pokemon character.
It's a remake of Evil Dead.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just imagining, like, what would the sequel be like?
from Ash?
From Ash.
Ooh,
Ash. Too Ash, yeah. Too Furious.
Too Ash, Too Furious.
Let's not... So here's how the show's gonna go. We're gonna make fun of this guy's game. We're gonna do this interview section. It's gonna be about 35 minutes or so, and then we're gonna be back on the other side with some grindage, as Pauly Shore would say. That sucks. Guys, I think we ought to just go ahead and go into the interview. So we're gonna do a little bit of a time warp, and Dennis is going to tell us who we're with.
We're going to do a time warp beyond Pauly Shore references.
All right. Well, we are here with Kyle Ballantyne, who is the developer of Two Ash, which is an upcoming game. And we are ridiculously excited to talk to you, man. Thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah. And I think I'd like to start just by kind of giving you a carte blanche and just asking you to tell us about Two Ash and tell us what is it about, and just kind of go from there.
Cool. So I had an idea for an RPGs have always been my absolute favorite type of game. Action RPGs, strat, whatever, but especially the old school ones. And so whenever I thought about making a game, I remember like when I was a kid sketching out Kirby levels and stuff, but when I thought about making one, it was definitely an RPG. So I had an idea about a couple years ago for a game where you're kind of an old guy, imagine somebody like turned to stone and coming back to life and trying to, you know, save the world or some kind of stereotypical plot like that, but he's getting weaker and so you're kind of racing against time. So it started off with that, and then like I was saying earlier, they had that Humble Indie Bundle, and I remember playing RPG Maker back on PS1, I think.
Oh yeah.
It's an old one. And I was like, wow, they've actually been making new versions of this. So I was checking it out and playing with it and decided, like, it actually seems like it's really a pretty good tool for someone like me that, you know, I don't know any programming. I'm a decent artist, but not when it comes to like pixel art or anything. But what I knew I could do is write and maybe level design and plan out the plot like that. So I decided to start it up, and ended up being really fun to make, and just even like tile out all the world map was really fun. And then, of course, writing the story and everything and the dialogue.
So how long have you been working on the game?
I think it's been about 6 months now.
Okay.
And I was trying to calculate the hours because Steam gave me the hours on how much time I had on the program.
Mm-hmm. You know, they kept it.
And that one was up to like 2:30 or something. And I got the newer version of RPG Maker MV when that came out in October. So I transferred everything over and have been redoing lots of stuff and making it from there. So it's been at least a couple hours a day after every day at work.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Well, you know, it definitely, that thing you do between 7 and 11 says a lot. So that you've been working on this speaks to kind of a certain amount of kind of personal passion. I mean, so talk a little bit more about where kind of the concept came from for this, because most RPGs are empowerment fantasies, most video games even. That's not really a new kind of concept. What made you kind of decide to go against the grain?
Yeah, so just to explain, I didn't really think about it before, but to explain just the game premise in general, it's
an
old school RPG, you know, in the vein of like the old Final Fantasies and everything, or old Dragon Quest, but your main character, like I said in my original idea, was that he's older and dying in some way, so instead of the fights leveling you up, they level you down in a way, and keep lowering your stats, you lose skills, and so the game becomes not only you have a bit more of a sense of urgency, but then you get to start off having fun. Because a lot of RPGs, you just press attack, attack, attack at the beginning for the first few hours until you finally get some good spells or something. So this one, you actually get to play around with a full set of skills and spells, and then you're going to miss them when they're gone. So when you finally get to a boss and now you can't, you know, take away his stat buffs or something like that, it's going to be tougher for you. So the idea, I don't know exactly where that idea came from. I think I was just thinking because RPGs, something I liked about them so much is that you get connected to the characters, especially over time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of RPGs, the kind of the story and gameplay, or the really good RPGs are where the story and gameplay are really tied.
Yeah.
So I thought, in a game, some sort of game where it's the opposite effect of, instead of a power fantasy thing, like you said, where you're getting weaker, an RPG might be a good fit for that. Because you really feel the loss of power.
Were there any other games that you kind of drew for inspiration when you were making this game?
I think something that made me think about how I designed it, not necessarily the idea itself, but how I've been designing it, was I played through Lightning Returns. I think that was earlier this year. Okay. And have you guys played that one?
No, which one is that?
The Final Fantasy 13 Lightning Returns. It was
Okay.
Yeah.
That was just earlier this year. And so in that game, you have a ticking clock the whole time.
Oh, wow.
And you end up kind of having, you kind of end up having more time than it originally tells you. Mm-hmm. And so you end up having plenty of time to do all the major quests and stuff. But just that thing of having a ticking clock and the world is ending in that game gave this great sense of urgency where you really were deciding, like, is this side quest worth it? Is it worth it to fight this monster? Is it worth it to go out of my way for this treasure? And wow. I really like that kind of tension. So that's what I'm going for in my game.
What's kind of funny is, like, the way you're setting it up is that as you level up, you level down. So that makes every battle that you choose to fight kind of you're drawing on finite resources, right? You only have so many in you.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, even a win is a loss in this game, it sounds like, almost. You know?
Yeah. You get through, but it takes a toll on you.
Yeah.
Nice. So, I mean, how do you keep that fun? Because I've never played Lightning Returns, but just the idea of having a game wide clock on that just makes me feel very anxious.
I definitely have that in the first little kind of tutorial sign at the beginning that warns you to make some separate save files just in case you get.
is that done in world or is that out of the game narrative?
Kind of half and half. Originally, it was a signpost that has some scrolling text, kind of says, like, welcome to Ash, and gives you that idea, but I've changed it to, like, a kind of a ghostly girl near the first cave where she kind of warns you, but it still is based, it's a little more tutorial.
Mm-hmm. It's dangerous to go in low and save up.
Do it in the world. but yeah, so I think one thing that can make it still fun is, like I said, it was still fun having the tension of that. And that way, when you're, you know, other than the world map, you can see where the enemies are and they chase you around. There are these little flames on the map. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can try to avoid some if you can. There's going to be some that are unavoidable. But that makes just the action of walking around the dungeons fun.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to find the treasure, get it, and get out quick before you fight. And there's still the fun of getting some better equipment, getting some different equipment, so you can kind of change up your character and change up your strategy. Okay. And then I think the main thing, or at least that I'm hoping, is that the story will be good enough where people want to keep going and kind of power through and rise up to that challenge of getting weak.
How difficult is it to balance for that? Because every curve that we have in our mind is reversed. Like, how do you design some of the later encounters, or do you want that to be a surprise?
I mean, and that's something I wanted to talk about in general is, you know, a turn-based. I could turn it into a Final Fantasy time bar thing, but I think I want to keep it just pure turn-based. Mm-hmm. And turn-based battles, they're really hard to make interesting. I've played a ton of RPGs, mm-hmm. and some do it really, really well, like especially the Shin Megami series.
Yeah.
They have some incredible battles for being just a pretty plain take turn kind of system.
You're talking to a couple huge fans of XCOM on this podcast. Okay. So
yeah.
we know so what turn-based done right looks like.
Mm-hmm. And I think what it comes down to is, of course, like making, you know, you have some fun skills and spells, and there's just a basic MP bar, and then there's a TP bar that charges over time. So you're always deciding, oh, okay, should I spend 20 on this skill right now or wait for a payoff?
Mm-hmm.
Trying to make it so that you're never just pressing attack over and over and not waiting for anything else, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it's making the enemies interesting. Yeah. So I've got, you know, a couple enemies halfway through that self-destruct if you get them too low on life, or one of the first bosses is a big golem. And there's two little like totems next to him.
Mm-hmm.
They heal him or hit you, but if you lower their life just enough, they'll like malfunction and hit him instead.
Oh,
nice. Cool.
Cool. So I'm trying to, especially with the boss battles, make them unique and interesting, and that hopefully will keep the overall game fun and make you, like I said before, really feel when you lose a skill because you're going to need some of those stronger skills later.
So is this still a like a high fantasy type setting?
Basically, yeah. I'm taking, of course, some liberties with the fantasy as far as what the character's talking about and stuff. I'm just trying to make it its own little universe. But yeah, basically it's the stereotypical, you know, Final Fantasy type world.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm curious. Go ahead, Ben.
when you level down, do you choose what skills you lose, or is it automatic?
No, when you level down, it's the stats that are going gradually down. The skills, I thought about making you lose it at a certain level, but instead it's after major bosses that you lose sets of skills.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's brutal. Wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, after that golem boss, Dimitri, the main guy, will kind of fall down and fade out, and whoever's with you at the time will be like, are you okay? Are you okay? Oh, that took a lot out of me, and it'll say which skills you lost.
Yeah, well, that probably makes it a little bit more sensible, because you probably lose skills that are related to that fight. You don't want to have lost those before you get to it otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. That made it a lot easier to balance out what the enemies could do at certain points in the game.
Yeah.
But as far as balancing the overall difficulty and everything, that's why I've really been in need of playtesters. You know, and a lot of people have been able to sign up on Facebook, and I think I got like at least 30 people trying it right now and then emailing me back, and I made a little questionnaire, and because I really, you know, I can't test it myself anymore. I know their weaknesses. I know what to do on each fight.
Yeah.
Have you, from the playtesting, have you seen, I know kind of the stereotypical joke is that, you know, if you get to a dungeon and, you know, one path, you know, leads to the boss, you always take the other path to, you know, shake it down for treasure. With the fact that, you know, now the more you do, the weaker you get, do you find people's behaviors kind of changing?
I did. One person that got back to me, they played through the first, I think they were about halfway through, and they did say that they're getting a little bit lost in some of the dungeons, which I was excited about because it's overall fairly linear, but I try to make some branching paths because I'm sick of all the modern games having just long hallways for every level.
But
I haven't gotten enough feedback yet to know that for sure, but I'm hoping that kind of the treasures and the equipment that I have you find are worth your while to go out of your way for. For example, money, you don't get any money from the fights. You can only find that in treasure chests. So that kind of makes it more worth it, because if you want to afford something in the shop, you do have to explore a little bit.
You mentioned a companion earlier. This game has a party system, right?
Yeah. So the main guy is Dimitri. You're always him, and you can change his equipment and everything. And then he's got a shield named Gallium, who's sentient.
Let's talk about that for a second. What?
It's fantasy, man.
I didn't have that idea originally, but I wanted to make, again, to liven up just a basic taking turn battle system. I wanted to have it so you choose an action and choose a stance. So like a power stance or a defensive stance or something. So you're kind of choosing two things at once because you're mainly this character. But I couldn't figure the way the RPG Breaker was. I couldn't figure out a good way to do that. So I ended up making a second character who's kind of invisible in your party, but he is the shield on the main guy. Mm-hmm. You can see in the battles. And he's kind of like a Navi type character. Like he's gives some of the exposition. He guides you a lot because he's an old wise immortal shield.
Mm-hmm. Does he tell you to listen a lot?
Yeah. and instead of Dimitri being the master, he's the master and calls Dimitri the squire.
Nice.
So he's always kind of touting his knowledge and everything, and I was able to have some good tension between him, who's immortal, and Dimitri going through accepting what's going to happen to him.
Sure.
So you have him and Gallium throughout the whole game, and there are five other characters that you get throughout the game. But the first two, you get only one or the other.
Interesting.
Okay.
So how will you be able to interact, like, as you get older or maybe wiser, more run down, whatever you want to call it? Are you going to be able to kind of inspire your party mates to help fight for you, to compensate for kind of your own weakness?
Well, in general, they are their level is static. So that's something else that I try to do to help balance it out overall is, okay, at least this character, I know what level they're going to be and what they're capable of, so they can get you through this section of the game, or at least help you. That would be really interesting, though, to make a little mechanic where maybe if you're choosing the right things, and if you're kind of going towards the good ending of accepting death, then it gives them some stat boosts or grants them a new skill or something. That might be an interesting thing to add in.
What happens when you die?
Whoa, cool.
Well, okay.
At the end or throughout the game?
I mean, throughout the game. Like, you know, it's an RPG, so you have an HP bar. Like, when it gets down to zero, the entire game seems to be about subverting our expectations about the way games deal with death. So how do you deal with death in kind of that prosaic RPG way?
Yeah, so I think I'm going to add in some sort of game. Right now it's just a basic game over, and then load back your last save, but I think it would be a good idea to do a little end scene, maybe something about something where Dimitri, the main guy, says that he's in pain, that he's not ready for this, that he's kind of that he wasn't ready to accept what's happening now, because that's the overall lesson of the game, is you're trying to get him to a point where he can accept it. But that is a good point, because the whole point, I mean, that's going to be a big part of the game near the end. So
that's really interesting. And you had mentioned earlier the idea of kind of guiding your characters towards the good ending. Are you able to kind of refuse to accept your decline or your death, and do those choices have consequences?
Yeah. So that right now, the dialogue choices you get, I'm basically counting which ones you're answering. And if you answered more of them with answers such as kind of being naive or naively optimistic about life, that's going to go towards the bad ending. And if you answer more ones that are accepting of death, that's going to go towards the good ending. Right now, it's kind of a surprise at the end of which one you're going to get. But I did add in halfway through, there's a, like a fortune teller character or something that warns you if you're on the wrong path or not.
Oh, okay.
So there's not like a persistent meter like in a BioWare game that says you're being too naive.
No, nothing like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, so we've spent a lot of time kind of talking about the mechanics of the game, and I think that that's kind of important because they do feed into that message. You know, we make kind of oblique references to kind of the lesson, and we're talking about the way that this ties into the story of, you know, accepting death. But I mean, this does kind of have a real life teaching utility, for lack of a better word, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping. And again, with I think why a game, specifically an RPG, could be so impact, like could have a good impact, is because you spend time with those characters. It's not just a story you're watching and dialogue choices. You are feeling the weakness throughout the game. You are feeling less and less powerful. And then what do you do with that? Do you keep going or not?
And this is kind of informed by your professional life too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I talked about in the article for the game, a big part of treatment for a lot of symptoms, actually, like anxiety, depression, and especially grief, is just letting go what you can't control. Mm-hmm. That's a huge, especially something like anxiety and fear.
Yeah.
So
you snap the rubber band when you notice that something is out of your control and you just need to accept it. Yeah,
exactly. Because there's only so much you can control, and death is always one of those things that has fascinated me over my life. I don't know what happens after you die. Mm-hmm. I'd like to believe in reincarnation. I think that'd be cool, but nobody knows. So it's one of those things that we just have to kind of accept the mystery and embrace it, hopefully.
So speaking of things that you can and can't control, I'd love to hear more about what it's like kind of developing a game on your own. Because in one sense, you have a ton of control over the direction and everything like that. In another sense, though, you've only got so much capacity to do stuff. So talk about kind of the freedom there and also the frustration there.
Yeah, so far I was having my brother play test it, and, you know, he was giving suggestions left and right, and some stuff I was like, okay, totally, I can change that, I can fix that. And other stuff I was like, oh crap, I have no idea how to do that. sometimes simple stuff, because like I said, I don't know the programming. There's luckily a lot of good resources out there for the program I'm using, but there's not something for everything. So that is kind of frustrating, not being able to change every little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's also kind of fun working with limitations. Because in one sense, if I can do anything, that would probably put a lot more anxiety on me and put a lot more pressure and take a lot longer to do everything. But having some limitations, I think has been a good thing.
So you have to accept the things that are outside of your control.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sure. Are you using predominantly like stock art, or you mentioned that you did have some art skills, but not so much in the pixel realm?
Right. I've been doing mix, and that's been something that originally I was using all the stock stuff, but mm-hmm. since then I have been going back and editing. So I put the characters' portraits; those are all hand drawn, and a couple of the pictures, the title screen, I did a photo for. And so, but the general enemies, it's kind of a mix of stuff that was stock in RPG Maker and then also stuff that the community has posted. A lot of really great music that I was able to get that people, you know, really luckily let you use for commercial games or non-commercial games, just giving everybody credit, of course. Mm-hmm. So I was able to get a good mix of everything. Mm-hmm. And I have been able to get a little bit into the pixel art. For example, Dimitri's shield. Normally it wasn't shown on his little sprite in the battles, mm-hmm. but I was able to go in and give him the shield on all the frames of animation and get it in there. Nice. So it's Gallium, the shield, a little more prominent.
And how about the music too? I mean, I'm curious because that's usually one of my favorite parts in a JRPG. Are you seeking resources for that as well?
I've been thinking about it. A couple people on Facebook did reach out and say, oh, I'm a budding musician, and if you want, you know, maybe I can do a song or something. I think that would be really cool. I'll see if anybody gets back to me by the time I want to be done with it. But so far, like I said, they had a lot of good music on there already that is totally in the spirit of all those JRPGs, mm-hmm. and a lot of community music too. So I had a lot to pick from. So then it just became which ones fit the theme of each area, which ones fit the theme of battle. And I'm pretty happy with it so far.
Yeah.
Do you have a planned release date yet?
Yeah, so far I'm planning February 1st, but it really depends on how fast the playtesters get back to me so I can make changes.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure.
If I get a ton of feedback within a couple weeks, yeah, I could probably be done by mid-January or something.
Mm. That boggles my mind. I feel like in 6 months I could make just enough to be in the trailer that you showed. So that's really impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great program for making RPGs because it does a lot of the legwork for you, and especially now that I have kind of the skeleton of the game in there, you know, most of the dialogue is there, it's all the levels are fully functional, you can play through the whole thing. Now I'm tweaking and changing, adding, cutting things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Polygon article, that's how we kind of heard about this project and learned about you. As the project has gotten more kind of attention, have people kind of been coming to you kind of with their own personal stories? Because, you know, what you're talking about with this is really heady stuff. Like, how have people kind of responded to the subject matter of this?
Yeah, so I've been really, really excited and also honored by, like you said, some people actually have been emailing me and on the Facebook message talking about some of their stories of loss. Somebody was talking about a couple of suicides in their family and some of the people they lost. One person, I think, on the Polygon article, I'm sure they were joking, but they were talking about how they would never play this because all they have is their nihilism and the rejection of death, and that's how they enjoy it. So,
right.
But in general, I've gotten a lot of good responses, people that think it's going to be a really good kind of teaching tool and lesson, and people offering suggestions of what to do next too.
And you've kind of made some kind of nods towards making it acceptable so people can kind of get to that quicker, right? Can you explain a little bit of this, a little bit of your choice to do two different modes?
Yeah, so I definitely with indie games, I've been noticing these past couple of years, there's more of these like really just story-based games and kind of exploration games. Like I played To the Moon too long ago. That was really good. Like Vanishing of Ethan Carter and Gone Home and all these ones that are really just story based. Mm-hmm. And so I do see that that's what a lot of people do look for that. I still really like having the video game mechanics in there, especially an RPG or something like that. I really want the gameplay too. And so I decided it's actually going to be fairly easy once I finish it to just strip out the combat, maybe, fast forward a couple little spots and make it work smoothly as more of an adventure game. Because mm-hmm. That way people, you know, some of my friends that don't play games as much, that way they can play it too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Plus the full RPG version, I can make nice and challenging like I would like.
Yeah.
And I don't have to kind of do a happy median of making it easy enough for anybody and that might bore the RPG fans, you know?
Yeah. So it's the wisdom of Solomon. You don't compromise. You just cut it right down the middle.
Figure you can, just like the idea of having difficulty settings on a game. If you want that kind of experience where you can walk through and just see the story and everything, you can definitely do.
Yeah.
I feel like that's what most people are asking for in an easy difficulty section. Mm-hmm. or selection. It's like, yeah, I don't want to worry about the battle. So just take them out. That makes a lot of sense.
I remember doing that my brother doing that in one of the Metal Gear games too, where we were just like, okay, I think it might've been Snake Eater. We're like, okay, well, this game's got a lot of cool systems and everything, but I really just want to see what happens. So let's sort of down easy and kick all the bosses' asses.
Yeah.
Snake Eater, Philosophy Edition.
It's mostly just conversations about monster movies.
So speaking of philosophy, I, you know, obviously you have to be thinking about death a lot yourself, designing a game about it. Has the actual process of designing the game and doing all this stuff kind of helped shape your own thoughts on the subject?
Yeah, I think so. One of my coworkers started, you know, when I was telling her about the game all the time and what I was doing with it, and when I bring it with someone else, she'd be like, "Oh, watch out for Kyle. He's talking kind of morose right now." And I was like, "I know, but it's on my mind." Mm-hmm. But I think it's helped me think about it not only for myself, but also when I'm talking with some clients, especially if they're suicidal or something, and we get on the topic of what happens to you after you die, or again, things that you can't control. A lot of times when people have such bad depression where they get suicidal, it's because they're kind of saying, why me? Why do I have this life? Why do I have to suffer this way? So obviously if you learn to accept that stuff, you could tackle some of the depression. So it has been really helpful thinking about it more and thinking about all the aspects of not just death, but loss in general.
Sure. Yeah. Do you ever hope to have the game? Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to ask if you ever hope to have the game in a place where you would want to share it with patients.
Yeah. I think that would be really cool. I actually have a couple of my patients that are gamers and want to try it out when it's ready.
Nice.
So I'm like, yeah, if you guys want to play it, you absolutely can.
So how do you balance, I know with some of that, I imagine there could be a balance though between, on the one hand, you know, have a game that explores this and, you know, can help people cope. But on the other hand, if this is something, someone was already wrestling with, it could be, you know, quite upsetting.
Yeah, I can see that. And especially if they end up with a bad ending or something, they might feel a little, a little bad about themselves or something. But I think it's, what's more important is, like I said before, the story and the gameplay being tied together. And that's more important is just generally, you know, to stick through it and to be able to accept it and go on even when you're getting weaker.
Okay.
Very cool. Do you think games can be helped to use patients cope with other things?
I think so, yeah. I think what's cool about games, like I said, is you feel more connected to the characters rather than just a movie or a story. You're in at least somewhat control. You have some control, so you're kind of making those choices, whether it's through dialogue or just what you do in the game. And so I think it makes a bigger impact on what you're seeing and the story that you're getting. So I think absolutely there could be good opportunity for people to understand maybe the consequences of how they communicate. I'm really big on assertive language in a lot of the groups that I do, and that would be great to, you know, have a little bit in there of how you approach someone about a matter and what you say and how you say it, how that affects their reaction.
I think that's Alpha Protocol.
Oh, yeah.
Now be careful, because if you say it wrong, they will totally try to shoot you.
That is a weird message.
So do you have any plans for a follow-up game after this? I know you're still like finishing up this game, but yeah.
Yeah, I think so. The follow-up game I was thinking of, just not necessarily related to these themes, but I was thinking like also to do something lighter. I was like, okay, how about a game like a Homeward Bound kind of story where you're a dog trying to get home, something a little lighter.
Yeah.
still could be heartwarming or something, but one of the patients, a good ending and a bad ending. That would be really sad. One of my patients suggested, oh, how about one where you go in and change people's delusions or something? And that got me thinking, oh, yeah, it could be something where you're kind of going into people's minds, or something like Persona 4, where all the dungeons are kind of designed around somebody's deep, dark secret, you know?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Check out Aether 1. It's a PC and PS4 game that deals with that, and it's pretty good.
Cool.
It wasn't Psychonauts have some elements of that, or I never actually played it.
Psychonauts is another good example where you're kind of going in and the area that you're in kind of reflects the person's mind or whatever's going on in the story.
Aether 1 was on PlayStation Plus, right?
Yeah. I haven't talked about it, but just because I haven't played enough of it to know what it's entirely about. But it very much is that kind of going into the center of the mind kind of thing. Man, I really need to play Persona 4. Like, is that the last big JRPG you've played?
No, I play at least one at any time. I've actually been going back to some older ones, like Breath of Fire 4 and on my little phone emulator playing Lufia, which I remember playing way back in the day on like Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, we have a lot of fans who are big Lufia fans.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. And man, the dungeons in those games are incredible. They're almost like a Zelda game.
Yeah.
And then I'm also playing the newest one I got is Disgaea 5.
Okay. Yeah, I always wait for those to come to mobile.
That makes more sense.
is
love Disgaea on the DS.
Mm-hmm. Is 5 any good?
Yeah, it's good so far. I haven't really caught up with all of the Disgaeas. I think I played 1 and a little bit of 2. Mm-hmm. But 5 has a lot of new mechanics that I'm guessing they introduced slowly throughout the series. So there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's like jumping into a late Tony Hawk game. I'm like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Some catching up. But I'm really excited for Xenoblade this week.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that looks amazing. That doesn't
take way too much from working on my game.
Suddenly the game is going to come out in February years from now.
2017.
Delays are all the rage right now, so you'll fit right in. Hey, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. Like, this has been really cool hearing about the game.
Yeah, yeah. You guys have had been a pleasure answering all the questions.
Yeah. So if people want to learn more about the game, where should we direct them to?
So there's the Facebook page, facebook.com/2ashgame. Mm-hmm. Or the main website that I made now, which I'll update both of those, is 2ashgame.wordpress.com.
Okay.
And so I have my contacts on both those, and I put up a new trailer kind of explaining that shield character's mechanics and stuff. So I'll try to update them pretty regularly until it comes out.
And are you still accepting playtesters?
Yeah, I think I can use at least some more. I'll probably put a cap on it pretty soon so that I can get the first round of them back, make some changes, and then if there's time, get some more. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I can definitely still send out some more of my current build.
Cool.
Well, I'm sure we'll have people interested in coming your way. There was you mentioned that you've gotten great response to the game, and even just people answering questions on our Facebook page were you know, kind of sharing stories or perspectives. So it's really cool to see the way people respond to this topic.
Yeah, I've been really, really surprised and pleased that even with the Polygon article, that people seem to understand the concept and kind of see why it could be, you know, not only interesting for a game, but could be helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Right.
Yeah, thanks so much, man. We look forward to it coming out.
All right.
The Grind. And now it is time for The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing. But first, thanks so much to Kyle. I know we thanked him like 5 times on the air, but that was fun.
Yeah, that was a really good interview.
It really was.
Yeah. I would encourage everybody to go check this out. Read the Polygon interview that goes a little bit more into depth about kind of some of the motivations behind the game. But check out his official sources as well. But on to the games we have been playing. Let's see here. Does anybody want to volunteer to go first?
Sure, I'll volunteer.
Okay, David, you had first dibs.
Sure. So I've been continuing on with Fallout 4.
Mm-hmm.
I made it to where is it? Like Diamond City? Is that Lexington?
Fenway Park.
Fenway Park, which is a thing apparently.
Yeah, that's where the Red Sox play.
Okay. Which is a thing, apparently.
I've heard enough people say baseball that I believe you for now.
For now.
No, I
do enjoy, actually, there's a segment where the weapon merchant is hawking baseball bats, which he refers to as swatters, and describes baseball as being a national pastime where basically two teams meet on the field and beat each other to death.
Neighborhood stick fights.
Yeah. And you have the option to correct him in various different ways.
Oh, because you're a man out of time. You are Brendan Fraser from Blast from the Past.
Right, right. Actually, spoilers one of my favorite lines of dialogue so far is, Preston, the Minuteman guy, who's just generally a badass. But like early on, you know, you finally kind of get through your initial adventures, and he, you know, ask you kind of your story, mm-hmm. and you tell him about it. It's just like, oh, okay. And like you're straight up in your dialogue, you're like, wait, isn't this kind of weird to you? It's like, nah, seems reasonable.
Yeah. I mean, he's seen some shit, so
that's true. I really like, you know, based on, they kind of have the, I would say they have the Mass Effect dialogue system, but it's now they have the every game ever dialogue system.
The dialogue system that Mass Effect pioneered, where different directions on the screen correspond to kind of different mannerisms.
Right, right. And in this case, it can end anything from, you know, you can be like, yep, that's totally how it was, to like actually explaining baseball, to I really like the one that kind of maps to like good, or you know, like idealistic, is just you be explaining about it being the American pastime and not really talking much about the rules at all.
Well, you see, it's a place where a bunch of people got together and ate a bunch of bad food and got real drunk, and then there was a traffic jam afterwards.
So, so that's kind of fun. I've now got a reporter in my party who's pretty badass. I think the toughest thing about this game is going to be, unlike the previous one where, I totally forget her name, the Brotherhood of Steel woman.
I forget her name too. It's something very kind of generic, but.
Yeah, was the only of the, at least from like a personality standpoint, was the only of the companions that I really cared about.
Mm-hmm.
In this game, I kind of care about all the companions.
Oh, nice.
And which is unfortunate because I can only have one come with me. Like, I kind of wish they had either done like the have them all commentate over the radio, or had them like, you know, do the RPG, like, you know, once you get to a cutscene, they're all just magically there commentating.
Yeah. We're talking about Veronica from yes. Yeah. Although I liked Arcade, and then Raul was pretty good too.
See, Raul just annoyed the heck out of me. Just, I realized it was supposed to be kind of, you know, a character beat and that sort of thing, but just the constant complaining just annoyed me.
Mm.
But
I was like Whiskey Rose.
She was pretty good too.
She was also pretty good, actually.
I mean, that's a good problem to have. companions are too good.
David, yeah. How many companions do you like better than the dog?
See, that's the problem. Ooh. It's like, I also really like dog meat.
Yeah.
Wait, do they just keep on calling it dog meat in Fallout 4?
Yes. Yeah. Well, initially they just call it dog, and then you meet some.
It's like an old lady in a junkyard.
Well, yeah. It's the in Sanctuary. It's Preston's like kind of group of survivors. There's a old lady who can like is psychic,
mm-hmm.
which leads me to wonder how many the Strand references I'm missing.
Well, isn't it also heavily implied that she's a chem addict too?
Oh, yeah. it's not implied.
Okay,
bona fide.
I haven't gotten here, but I've read about this. So.
Yeah, no, it is straight up. She's like, yeah, go get me some jet so that I can tell the future.
Okay.
And like, she does appear. This is actually one of the things I kind of like about some of the Fallout is, you know, psychic abilities are part of the Fallout world, part of the lore, but in definitely in 3, or well, I would should say definitely in New Vegas, which I've played, and at least so far in 4, they've chosen not to make them incredibly apparent.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the one kid in New Vegas that is psychic.
I can't remember.
Yeah, he's just like a one-off character that you meet real briefly that you can have like you know, predict events, and it's just kind of a neat thing because they've kind of chosen to just have it be, you know, do a real light touch with it. So that's been fun. The other thing I did is actually picked up Final Fantasy XIV.
You mean 14?
If they're going to spell it in the stupidest way possible, I'm going to pronounce it in the stupidest way possible.
Ziv, Final Fantasy Ziv.
Yes, Final Fantasy Ziv. I haven't gotten real far into it. Partially the controller controls are just insanely bad.
Oh, you got this on PS4.
Yeah, unfortunately, with the new expansion, my computer can no longer handle it.
Okay.
So I went with the PS4 version. It's apparently cross compatible or whatever.
Oh, so you're playing on the same servers with PC people.
Right, exactly. So the main thing I've seen so far is character creation.
Okay.
Which is kind of funny, actually. It's kind of interesting. It seems like just some weird things I've noticed. At least if you're playing a human, the characters are very much designed for non-Western proportions.
Can you define non-Western proportions for me?
Just in terms of like what is considered average height is fairly obviously not what you would consider that to be in America. Because, for example, basically you can, for each of the races, there's two variants you can play.
Mm-hmm.
So like for elves, it's basically like high elves or dark elves. But for humans, it basically corresponds to like ginormous, like barbarian people and everyone else. So like kind of the Norseman stereotype and then everyone else. And if you play as a everyone else, the tallest you can possibly make your character is just under 6 feet tall.
Okay. Is everything to scale like that? Like, how can you tell it's just under 6 feet tall?
It says, you know, 76.5 inches.
But I mean, if that was just a slider, it wouldn't bother you?
Oh, I mean it doesn't bother me. Okay. I just find it kind of funny.
Oh, okay. That, right.
And then if you play as like the Norseman, that's the minimum you can do.
Okay.
So apparently you know, anyone that's 6 feet or over is like a, you know, is basically Thor.
Oh, it's the EverQuest approach.
Yeah.
You know, where there's humans, then there's barbarians, which are a different kind of human, and then there's the other kind of human, which is black people. No, I'm not being flip, and like that is not an opinion on spouse, but yeah, there was a race in EverQuest called the Erudites, which branched off, and they were all the black people wizards.
Huh.
I'll be over here. Go ahead.
Sure. And then the other thing I find funny is the degree to which, you know, as you're going through the character creation, it's really kind of weird because, in effect, like going through the options for like hairstyle or faces or stuff like that, it soon becomes apparent you're basically cycling through Final Fantasy stereotypes.
Like stereotypes from the main games?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, all of the choices are very much like things that you would expect to be there, and like, you know what this character would be if it was like a mainstream Final Fantasy game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, here are all the, like, you know, kind of like anime-esque shag haircuts that inevitably the hero would have.
Yeah.
You know, here is the hero hair. Here is the probably going to backstab the main character hair.
You know? Well, that person's always under a helmet.
True.
But, they backstab, then they take the helmet off, and you're like, ah, I should have known.
Yeah. No! But yeah, it's just, you know, like, it's the same thing. There's a whole bunch of voices, and it's all just, it's all just, you know, the generic, like, cheers and, like, grunts of anger and stuff like that. But, like, one of them is the like, generic, you know, the Dynasty Warriors, like, samurai voice that's seems to be like every time that sort of character appears in a game, stuff like that. It's just, it's really kind of funny.
So I mean, that's the visual side of it. Like, how do the classes break down? Because I know that the jobs in 11, which was the previous Final Fantasy MMO, if my reckoning is correct, they kind of match two jobs you would see earlier in the series. So you'd have, like, a dragoon, you would have Black Knight, white, or Black Mage, white mage kind of stuff. Does that still hold true, or are they kind of veering from that?
Yes, that's the case. However, basically you start out as they do the, you know, you start out as one job and the, or one, basically the way they describe it, you have your class and then your job, which in effect the jobs are advanced classes. And
so it's like physical fighter, but then you go into like paladin or black knight or something.
Well,
like that.
Yeah. And then, yeah, it tends to be the actual, even the classes are basically patterned off of the, you know, the stereotypical Final Fantasy classes. But then the jobs tend to be actually named after those classes and, you know, pull in some of their, you know, more iconic abilities. So, for example, one of the classes is Lancer, and then the job is Dragoon. So, you know, as a Lancer, you're basically, like, you're very obviously that, you know, patterned off of a Dragoon, but you don't have jump until you actually get the Dragoon job.
Right.
So it's like Pugilist and then Monk, Marauder and then Knight. I can't keep track of the stupid names they use for the magic classes. I think Thaumaturgist or whatever.
Thaumaturgist, yeah.
Is Black Mage, Conjurer is White Mage.
Versus the Happiergist.
Yes. But yeah, so and then like a couple of them you can change jobs at any time by equipping that job's weapons, and then you basically level everything independently.
Oh, nice.
A couple of skills each job are cross-class, so once you unlock them, you can use them with other jobs.
Oh, nice. Wow. So that's like Final Fantasy Tactics. Except
right,
it's not any, like, it's specifically designed ones, but...
Right. And then... a couple of the jobs are either like advanced, so they can only be, so like you can't play a thief until you have one other class at level 15.
Okay.
So there's stuff like that. So,
yeah. Huh. How is the play? Like, is it very MMO-ish? Are you going and collecting 10 chocobo scalps or what?
Yeah. Pretty.
They don't even have hair, they have feathers, but somehow you do it.
Just scalping chocobos.
Jeez.
Continue.
So far I've just been doing the introductory quests mainly.
Which, yeah, it's been a lot of, you know, sending you around the world to meet different people, stuff like that. But from what I've seen, it seems to be, pretty generic MMO stuff. I sort of get the idea that to a certain degree, I kind of feel like there's enough room in the market for one traditional MMO, and Final Fantasy Civ is it.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Just like with WoW kind of on the decline, but still having millions and millions of subscribers.
Well,
like,
yeah, although even WoW has got, you know, to a significant degree, it's gone away from, you know, kind of the traditional quest structure. They'll still have that.
Yeah.
But
like, what about Guild Wars 2?
That's so much more action based, though. Isn't
I
it?
Would say that's incredibly not traditional quest structure.
Oh well, sorry, I was saying there was only room for one more. Oh, I follow you now. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, what? Yeah, one straight up traditional one. They also have the Hunter's Log, which is basically kind of the way like achievements work in some games, where it's like kill three of this enemy, all right, kill four of this enemy, and they get more powerful as you go. Stuff like that. So yeah, it seems fairly traditional, but like I said, I'm still really early in.
Yeah. So. Huh. Any final thoughts on that? Because we have to move on to other.
No, that's about it. It's incredibly stereotypically Final Fantasy, but I think that's a good thing. I think that's
a draw.
I think a lot of games like this struggle in that they make an MMO of the game, and then what everyone wanted was to be able to make your own story in that world, and then they don't make it be that. So. Huh.
Neat. Who wants to go next?
Ben had jumped in originally, so.
Go ahead, Ben.
All right, I just have two. First one, I continue playing Fallout as well. Mostly doing main quests now. I think I'm at like level 23 or so. The story's not bad. It's similar to like The Last of Us in the sense that you can tell like it's borrowing from certain sources, or you know exactly what it's borrowing from. It's not like a new sort of idea, but they're executing pretty well. So it's interesting so far. So it could kind of go either way. It might be a really fulfilling storyline, or it might kind of fizzle out. But
yeah. Question.
Yeah.
You know, time in the game actually passes, you know, that you can go through holidays and stuff. So does your son age?
I don't know completely.
Okay. Cause that's my one fear is that like, as I'm dicking around with all these side quests, I'm finally going to get to the point to, save him. He's going to be like, you know, 25 or something.
Dad, I'm dying now. Do you got any money, Dad?
Yeah.
Why were you digging in that ditch to find bottle caps when you should have known the real treasure was right here the whole time?
Man, 2 Ash took a weird turn.
Yeah.
Turns out it was both Frog Fractions 2 and Fallout 4. It was very weird.
Frog out 8. But yeah, so that's fine. That's good. I'll continue playing that tonight after the podcast. So, I mean, it's fun so far. The one thing I was thinking about, though, is like the game, like engine-wise, it really hasn't changed a whole lot from when Fallout 3 came out. Like, it's pretty much the same sort of game. You know what I mean?
Have you fucked around with the crafting and building stuff?
Not really. David, I take back what I said like 2 weeks ago when we had a podcast. You are right. There are some pieces of items that you have where the only way you can scrap them is by dropping them and scrapping them on the ground. A lot of them you can scrap at like different benches, but yeah, that is annoying. Some of the workbenches are okay. Like one that's kind of useful is like, there's one for food where you can basically upgrade all of your food and kind of de-radiate your food.
Okay.
Because that's how cooking works.
Yeah, if you turn it into a steak, it doesn't have as much radiation in it.
Well, you put in the thermal radiation, and it runs out of room. It gets full of radiation, and there's so the thermal so radiation,
yeah, no, you got to
pushes
pop,
out the
like
iodine.
The Western.
You got to pop. You got to pop the radio stack. Come on.
Yeah.
So I mean, so that's kind of useful, but yeah. There's not like a noticeable difference, I think, in the engine between the one thing I noticed is you can't like pick up objects and move around at will like you could in Fallout 3, or at least I don't think you can using like the R3 button.
Oh, but, yeah. That awesome way to steal stuff where you're not technically picking it up. You're just hovering it. And then when you actually put it in your inventory, you're around the corner so nobody gets mad.
I'm just going to borrow this for a while. Yeah.
I mean, they're also impressed that you're hovering it, that no one's going to say anything.
Nobody wants to fuck with a psychic. Come on, man.
Yeah, like I said, the reason you don't see any other psychics is because it's you. They also took out the karma system, right?
It's like a Dragon Age. What is it? Companion approval rating?
Yeah. So certain actions, certain companions will approve or disapprove of it, even though they are not physically there.
Which do they do that even if they're not there?
Yes.
Okay. So I need to stop stealing stuff when Preston is around.
You just stop stealing stuff from Preston.
Yeah, word gets around. Your dog meat is a gossipy son of a bitch.
What is it, boy? He stole from Preston? No. Yeah, I don't. Anyway, so I'll keep playing that. It's good. The other game I've been playing is I played Rocket League for the first time this last week.
Oh!
That was a lot of fun. Yeah, I know it's a little bit late since that game probably came out, like, what, 6 months ago or so at first? But
there's a lot of people on the Slack who play that still.
Yeah, it's pretty enjoyable. It's especially enjoyable if you can chat with people when you're playing, because then you can kind of coordinate strikes and stuff. So, yeah, that was fun.
I really hope that becomes a e-sport or whatever.
Yeah, I think it totally could. I mean... And so one of the coolest things that about it though is it's just such a simple game, you know what I mean? But like, there's so much more enjoyment in that game right now than there are in so many different AAA games, you know. So like, it just goes to show that like, production does not equal quality when it comes to making games. So
yeah,
hopefully that will inspire other companies to make, you know, more fun games. But.
Do you have any cool stories? Like any inspiring sports tales? Any last minute victories, snatching victory from the jaws of defeat, overcoming and rising against the odds in a Rocky like fashion. It's a Cinderella story, I tell you.
So on Thanksgiving Day, we only we didn't have online, and we only had two controllers, and so we were playing one-on-one, and that was a lot of fun. But I mean, there's a lot of screaming like in every match, but so it's not like no one point sticks out, but like every match you play is pretty intense. So
the rules don't say a dog can't drive a car.
I just about turned this back into SNL bits. So,
but yeah, no, that was fun. I think I'll probably pick it up for PS4 or PC, probably PC since I should be able to play on that soon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, on soon. Wait a minute. Sorry. You thought you would get that past us, but what?
Yeah, no, I got a computer. I have to install an operating system on it still, but it's like a gaming PC, so.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool.
See, I feel like we've done this thing where we've all switched consoles. So now Dennis is the only one without a PS4. And I don't have a gaming PC.
Cole plays most of his games on a gaming PC and is uninstalling games from his Mac.
Oh, man. Up is down, down is up.
Oh, man. Huh. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Dennis, how about you?
Sure. I've been playing a lot. And the first thing I'll talk about, I've been playing a lot with other listeners, which is Broforce.
Oh,
and that game is so much freaking fun with multiple people.
That got an expansion recently, right? Or at least new content.
Yeah, I think it got free new content. I haven't finished unlocking the regular bros, so I don't think I've gotten to the expendabros yet. It's never going to be not funny. But yeah, so it's just the format of the game is really, really friendly to multiple people. Just you post the game name and a password for the game, and you can just drop in, drop out anytime.
Oh, that's, so that's fucking made for the Slack. Wow.
Yeah, it's perfect. And just the more people are on the screen, the more explosions are on screen at any given time. And when you're actually up to four players all at once, you just kind of run around with your eyes closed, screaming and firing at anything that moves.
Suppressing fires.
Yeah. Yeah, there. It's
as long as you yell suppressive fire, whatever you're doing becomes tactical.
Yeah. But, you know, I still half the time will be like, oh, I died, you know, 10 seconds ago and just didn't realize it. Mm-hmm. Because there were so many explosions going on. But you kind of learn to just embrace that and have a good time. Hmm. So that's cool. They released a some kind of patch update to the game since I first played it. So that the world map got a lot more elaborate. But it also made it so that I couldn't continue my campaign from the previous version of the game. So I had to start over, which it didn't take me long to get back to where I was. But I'm getting pretty far along for the game now. And I think I'm up to level 9, which is threat level Burgundy. and it was the level, I want to say it was the boss was the, it was called the Rail Fortress or something like that. But it's just incredibly difficult. And I wound up doing that one single player just because no one else was on at the time. And I don't know if that made it easier or harder. But there's the game definitely has a steady difficulty ramp to it. But yeah, that's a lot of fun, and it's a great little multiplayer buzz anytime you want one.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah. I also decided to try Crysis 3. I was feeling a first-person shooter of the AAA sort, so popped that.
As opposed to all those indie first-person shooters they make.
Yeah, you're super hots and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I was going to give them Killing Floor. They've made one.
But yeah, overall, it's a really, really good shooter. And the whole premise is that you're wearing a nano suit that can turn invisible or can turn into like an impenetrable tank at any point, just if you press the L2 or the R2 button. And you kind of switch back and forth between those modes on the fly, which works really, really well in combat. And just makes for... Oh, go ahead.
I love... one of my favorite Steam tags is basically the Crysis series and the Deus Ex series. It's just Nanobot Son.
Yeah. It is. The story in the game is like, oh, I've sacrificed so much, and am I even human anymore? I'm just nanobots. It's like, no, you're human. We're all human, man. And
that would be an awesome plot twist. Just the game ends, it just disperses into a cloud.
Yeah. Remember me. / us. Yes. But the story's not why you're there. They try to take the whole concept of like switching back and forth between these modes into pretty much every aspect of the game. So like all your weapons, if you hold down the select button, you can pull up all these different modes for your weapons, meaning you can like change the sights on the fly and you can change your ammo on the fly. And a concept that works really well, but the flipping back and forth between your basic stealth and tank modes you can do in the middle of combat, the like weapon sight adjustment and some other adjustments you can really only do like as you're preparing for combat.
Hmm.
So it's got its place. But the times where I've actually like, hey, I want to switch over to an electric arrow on the fly in the middle of combat have been really clunky and haven't worked that well.
Hmm.
They also, for some ungodly reason, I don't understand this choice, but if you just tap select instead of holding it down, it brings up like a customization menu for your entire suit. And so like you can choose different sets of perks for your suit to make it more stealth oriented or more tank oriented. Why they mapped that to the same button as customization for your weapons, I will never know. Because the number of times where I've been like, oh shit, I need an explosive arrow, you know, trying to pull that out, and suddenly I'm customizing my suit, and now I'm dead.
does it freeze time when you do that, or?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't freeze time with any of this stuff. Which again, it's really cool in concept because it's the idea that you're this like adaptive super soldier that's like changing on the fly. And it works really, really well with those base two functions. and not as well with any of the other ones. But like I said, overall, it's a really solid shooter. It's got a bit of a saggy middle. There's a lot of cutscene heavy stuff in the middle of the game. I think I'm through it now, which is really nice. But that's where they wax all poetic about what is a human and am I still human, and lots of stilted acting in that.
But, are you still jacking up North Korea?
I don't know where we are. No, we're in New York. I remember that now. We're in New York, which was under a dome initially for some reason, but now it's not. And now that it's not under the dome, that there isn't really any apparent reason for why it was under a dome in the first place. Like it's not radioactive or anything outside the dome. It's just there was a dome and now the dome is destroyed. So that makes no sense. But we're opening
up. It was a campaign promise.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're going to make Mexico pay for it.
Yeah. There we go. All of a sudden this all clicks together. So yeah, I'm not really focusing on the story. But it's a very solid shooter. That base mechanic is a lot of fun, and it scratches that itch for sure.
This is a game. This one came out in the year of the bow, right?
Yeah, yes. This one, Tomb Raider. What were the other ones? The Assassin's Creed, mm-hmm. got the crossbow.
Yeah.
What else? There were a bunch of them, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I call it the year of the bow. I only know of this one and Tomb Raider, but...
Yeah.
The Hunger Games.
Play Tomb Raider. But this is a good shooter as well.
What's that?
Of the two games, play Tomb Raider.
Okay.
But if you have to choose. Yeah. But if you get both of them, it's still worth your
play
time.
Tomb Raider first.
Play Tomb Raider first, yes.
Yeah. Nice. Is that all you have?
I think... Oh, just lots more Diablo 3.
Okay.
So yeah, I've played enough to talk about that a little bit more now, and I'll be quick. It remains a very fun co-op game, and I'm playing it all couch co-op with Jen. The infuriating thing is that a lot of the equipment that you get modifies how much experience you get, which in general is a great thing, like XP uber allis, right? So normally I'm like all for, hey, you know, I can get more XP out of my kills, so let's equip that. But that means that your characters are leveling at different rates depending on what equipment you have. And so it creates this almost metagame when you're playing with the same people. Not that it'd be horrible if we were, you know, a level and a half apart. I don't think it'd be horrible. But it's kind of fun to progress at the same rate.
Mm-hmm.
And it just like we're almost kind of curbing how much XP or having to think about how much XP we're getting extra and trying to keep it in general the same. Just because it's nice to kind of be at that same level for the same areas. So that I would much prefer, and I don't know how they could do this because you can't guarantee that you're playing with the same people all the time, but I would much prefer it to like just link the XP of whoever is in your party and do like a weighted average of all your XP gaining items or something like that. But that's a very small qualm in the grand scheme of things. It's a really, really fun game otherwise.
Have you beat Act 1?
I am right at the end of Act 1.
Okay. I'll be interested to know what you think of the final boss.
Of Act 1?
Yeah.
Okay. I will let you know.
Yeah. I like Act 1 because it has a lot of skeletons in the background.
And if there's a skeleton in the background in Act 1, it's going to be used in Act 3.
Yeah. It'll skeleton in Act 3. Yeah.
So does this feel well adapted to console? You're the first person that I've talked to who's played this. Like, I've only ever played it on Mac. Like, are you feeling limitations about the way it's presented?
No.
Does it feel like a PC game that's shoehorned into it?
No, it actually feels really, really natural on PS3 or on a console. And I think I was talking with Phil Holmes about the game, and he said he actually likes the way it plays on console better.
Oh, yeah. I think general consensus is that it's a console game.
Yeah, I will caveat that with both of us are playing melee characters,
mm-hmm.
and I could see it being a little more frustrated if you were playing ranged characters, where you were trying to select people to hit... you know, further away from you, because right now it's kind of whatever, unless you're holding down the lock on button, whatever character is closest to the direction you are facing is the one that you will kind of swing towards.
See, but I played the Demon Hunter where I played, and usually the way you play that is it's more about mobility and just firing into the crowd.
Okay, so it shouldn't bother you that much.
Then. Right.
So yeah, it controls really, really well on console. The one thing that I think bothers me is, and I think I might have said this last time, is the game feels designed for you to be like right up on the monitor versus played from across the room. So your kind of interface is showing your different skills and everything, and the text in the game are just a little small to read. We kind of have the couch pretty far across the room from our TV.
Yeah.
So I might be doing that to myself a little bit, but overall that's not a too big of a hindrance. But you know, we're really starting to get a fleshed out set of skills now, and the modifications that you get to the skills are really cool. So that's really neat, and it feels like you're getting meaningful choices. You know, the thing we always talk about is you don't just want like 5% better on an existing skill, you want a new verb, and it feels like Diablo 3 does an incredible job of giving you new verbs to play with.
Nice.
David, I liked your nonverbal because you sounded like you disagreed with it.
Well, that was actually my big complaint with the game, is that they gave you new verbs and that therefore made it impossible to specialize. But
interesting, because I don't know. So I'm playing the Barbarian, and like the Barbarian is pretty melee centric. Like I'm always going to be in the scrum, but that's kind of a choice I made with the class. Whereas the Crusader, which Jen is playing, feels like you can pretty well choose between being a melee class or a mid-range class.
Sure.
Like there are a lot of skills that she has that are, you know, like directly in front of her or, you know, in immediate area around her. But the one that she's using right now is, I think it's chains, or I forget what it's called, but essentially like it's an attack that you can make from medium distance and then will chain in between enemies. Sure. And a couple of the other skills, like her shield throw and stuff like that. And I'm murdering the actual name of all these skills, but they all work from further out. So
sure. I think, kind of what I'm talking about more is, for example, like the Barbarian's like frenzy ability. In this, it like increases, say, like movement speed by like 15-20%, something like that. Whereas if you fully upgraded it in Diablo 2, it increased movement speed by like 500%.
Okay.
Or like you in this, like your chain abilities, you know, might chain to like two or three guys, whereas in Diablo 2, if you fully upgrade it, would chain to like 10 or 15 guys. It's a thing where you can no longer say like, this is the mechanic I like, I just want to push it to like stupid levels.
Gotcha. So you can specialize, but you can't like limit break that specialization.
Right.
How far did you play Diablo 3 all the way through?
I did not. I got bored with it in Luke Gallane. But in Act 2.
Okay. Yeah. I'd be interested to see if you get to the end of the game, if there is stuff like that. Because some of the legendary gear that I've gotten, and this is a bad example because I'm not necessarily trying to get as much XP like I usually am, but I got a ring that gives me plus 25% XP. Sure. And that's what really made us realize the whole leveling difference thing, is all of a sudden I was shooting ahead and it's like, what in the world is happening?
I wonder if that's a console thing, because I was trying to think, I'm not sure I've ever seen a plus to experience gear. So yeah, I wonder or maybe they added in the expansion so that you didn't have like, you know, someone who picked up the expansion and had to play for like, you know, 30 hours to get to his friend's level or something, maybe.
Maybe. I think it's called the Oryx Ring or something like that, which, again, I don't even know if these items are persistent in their stats when they're legendary, but...
I have no idea.
So that felt a little bit on the level of what you're talking about, just with experience, sure. which is way less fancy than chaining attacks or, you know, movement speed, but...
Sure.
I'll be interested to see what's out there at the higher levels.
Neat. So I'm going to take us into what's going to be rapidly approaching the close, because guys, I've been so fucking busy.
Yeah.
Sorry. I lost a weekend to Duckstream, which was an amazing success, playing for a lot of it the Silent Hill Shattered Memories, which is an amazing game. Ben, have you played that?
I played it through twice. I think I played it and beat it in a day one time.
Oh, nice. It is relatively short if you're not playing it straight through and like needing to deal with your rapidly loosening grasp on reality. But
yours, or the play, or the characters?
What's either? But yeah, no, we I played that, went all the way through there. Dennis came over and we played some Silent Hill 2. And nice. that was pretty fun, and then moved on to Silent Hill.
I couldn't believe it when you pointed it out, but it's been nearly a decade since I've played that game.
Oh yeah.
And yet I remembered it vividly.
Yeah.
Just incredible. I can't believe that much time has passed, and I can't believe how well that game has stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
It's really been a decade?
Yeah, that was 2006, and it's 2015 right now, so we're coming up on it, like if we're rounding. But yeah. No, like to say we were at the hotel by that point, you know, by the time you came over, and yeah, you fared very well.
I need to try one of those games.
I had some bad save hygiene having me spend a lot of time in a rowboat towards the end.
Yeah. Oh, right, because you saved right before the... well, that's a little bit of bullshit, because normally the cameras point out the save pads, but the one save point in the hotel in the lobby is in a chair, and it's a very small zone in the floor that actually points the camera at it.
Yeah. But wait, it was still fun to play. So. Yeah.
Wait, so is this like Aiko Iku, where you have to like sit in chairs to save, or
no? In Silent Hill 2, there are these like red notepad pages that are pinned to walls, and usually in small rooms, so that when you walk into them, they're very prominently displayed, and that red color sticks out against kind of the dingy background color in a very stark way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so mine. just a very special for me was not pinned to a wall, but in the seat of a chair. Was not in a small room, but in one of the biggest rooms in the area. Yeah. And was not prominently pointed out by the camera. So,
and
little present.
And bad on me, I forgot that it was there. So I was like, I don't know, maybe it's in the office. Fuck, man.
Yeah.
So we did spend a lot of time in a rowboat. You can see that on the stream. I'm getting all of it onto YouTube.
That's a lot of YouTube footage.
Yeah. Trust me, I know. And Twitch's YouTube exporter is bullshit. Ugh. We raised $4,032.
Whoa.
I know, right?
That's awesome.
So yeah, that is pretty cool. But other than that, like right after that, I went home for Thanksgiving, and I've mostly in the meantime been playing stuff for other shows. So like played Bloodborne the Old Hunters all the way through.
Oh, how is that?
That's fantastic. That's some of the best content in the game.
Nice. Year of the Bow continued work pretty well?
No, like the bow is one of the last things you unlock, which makes this super weird. Like it gives you new builds to do, but or to use rather, but you only ever get access to them like way late in the game. Like this DLC is very high level content. So I think that these are new builds strictly for PvP, unless I really suck.
That's dumb.
Unless I really suck, and you can actually get to this at a lower level, but like. It's a sizable, like, it's a really sizable piece of content. There are 5 or 6 bosses, something like that, 4 distinct areas. Like, we thought this was going to be 2 episodes of On Fireside Chat. It's going to turn out to be 3.
Oh, nice.
Because of that. And some people were pretty upset about the reuse of some content. Like, they were saying, oh, it's just levels from the game. Well no, like, you're visiting nightmare versions of, like, maybe 1 or 2 of them. But, like, the way that it takes those and twists them is actually, like, new. They had to do a whole bunch of new stuff. So it can't be, like, greedy dev, lazy dev kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, and Dark Souls is kind of... brazenly reused bosses and stuff like that in the game before.
Mm-hmm.
And it's never felt necessarily lazy. It's just always been part of the weird Dark Souls quirk.
Yeah. The closest I can make the comparison is, so in the DLC for Dark Souls 1, you go to a forest that, since you've gone back in time, is actually an earlier version of Darkroot Garden. You know, and like you're actually looking at the way that this area has changed over time. But like, yeah, there's some reused geometry, but used to really good effect for comparison. So like, call me a white knight if you want. I'm sure people are, but it's not a bad thing, I don't think. Yeah, but cool. It's great. Like, some fantastic bosses in this. Leaning less heavy on the big beast bosses and more on kind of some cool duels. You know, cool duels.
I heard ghoul duels, and I'm like,
ghoul ghouls. Yeah, you know, ghouls.
So yeah. not just variants on wolves.
No, there are two of those, but they are outnumbered by cool stuff.
Cool ghoul stuff.
What element of the wolves now?
What's that?
What elements are the wolves now? Because they've got to be getting to like weird elements, like metal and wood.
There's one that's holy light, and the other one is fire, like fire and magma.
Oh,
yep.
So you're fighting Pokemon.
Yep, pretty much. You're fighting. It's basically you're fighting the Eevee variants. Vaporeon, go!
Oh, dude, I. Someone totally needs to fan theory that.
Yeah, that all the beasts are just Pokemon who wandered out of their dimension.
I was thinking more that like Bloodborne is like, you know, like several hundred years in the past of Pokemon.
Okay. Huh.
And then, I can see what's the boss from Demon's Souls that would be Snorlax, the guy with the sword in his side.
Oh, the Adjudicator?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that's Snorlax. Mm-hmm. There's one.
I don't know if I want to play this game.
I don't remember stabbing Snorlax, although I guess that would be one way to get past.
What do you think you did? Stabbing Snorlax. What do you think you did with that flute, man? Yeah. But
I sure know how to play a flute.
but other than that, I've just been playing a bunch of Pancake and Burger, but that's really it. Also, Ultra Despair Girls, but my opinion on that remains unchanged. It is a game that is kind of made only for me. It is in the Danganronpa continuity, and that is a survival horror game, which, big thumbs up.
I saw that on a shelf in a GameStop for Vita a while back, and I almost snagged it right there.
I have it physically. Like, you can just borrow it from me.
Oh, nice.
When you're ready for it. I'd recommend you play Danganronpa 2.
Yeah, I can
vodka. Come on, what do you think I am? Bourbon. Come on. Cool. I'm not a snob. I drink it's fine.
Yeah, I was gonna say, would you turn away vodka?
No. Come on. But I mean, if I was given a choice, if you put vodka and bourbon in front of me in some kind of wheel, okay. So if you guys were standing on either end of a room and one of you was holding vodka and the other was holding bourbon in some kind of way to curry my affection and decide who my true owner was, I would go to the bourbon.
One rose to give out.
What if we were both holding bourbon, then you couldn't decide and you'd have to just stand there.
Well, then it comes down to the brand, you know, is one of you holding a bullet, you know, is one of you holding Maker's Mark, or is somebody repping that Benchmark 8 shit? You know,
Ben is in the corner with old Rasputin or something, but he decided to drink it himself instead of offering it to
him. Sorry, Cole, this one's for me.
It's a side note. Wait a minute. Benchmark is my preferred.
It's a good mixing bourbon. I like it. Yeah. I like that as a mixing bourbon, actually. But to drink straight, I will definitely go for a bullet. Or for Maker's Mark. Those are both good. Huh. So we started talking about liquor. So I think we should probably button it up. Is that okay with everybody?
Sorry, what? I was drinking liquor.
I need somebody to say yes.
Yes.
Oh, thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this special and weird episode of The Level. Thanks again to Kyle for joining us on that interview. We'd remind people to check out his game, To Ash, both at his Facebook page and at his WordPress page. And you can find links to those on the site here as well. So I'm trying to think of like business stuff. You guys know all the things you can do. Dennis, I sent you during the episode an email with all of the titles of shows from the past year.
Oh shit, that's coming up, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Totally. So December's the cutoff. This episode does not count for the episode title of the year. And as a reminder, last year the winner was, let me look here, Nobody Puts Baby in the Fridge, which I'm sorry, it really should have been Barely Legal Pad. I'm gonna keep on saying that from my bully pulpit, but come on. But that'll be going up pretty soon, depending on when we can put it together. So watch the social media to help us figure out what's the best episode title, you know, of this past 12 months, from December of last year through to the end of November this year.
Your vote is all that will decide it.
Yes,
this
it
is an incredible responsibility.
Oh yeah, no, you
please
can
take it seriously.
You can fuck over a lot of people by choosing wrong. So
yeah, including yourself. No, so since it's so serious, we need to make sure everyone registers. So if you send me your social security number,
I can't be trusted with that. You know my problems with fraud.
So now I kind of want to look through and decide, like, what is the Donald Trump title?
Looking at the list here,
that would be, oh, here it is, the Donald Trump title.
Not going to be the title of this episode, fuck that guy. No, I don't have the list anymore, and I'm not going to belabor the point, but watch for that, because it's a fun thing that we do at the end of every year starting last year.
Both years.
Yeah. Cool. So I've been Cole Ross. I'm at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at DFuria on Twitter.
I've been David Mysmith at Mysmith777 on the Twitter.
I've been Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
And stick around to hear some titles. Okay, before we go any further, does anybody have one they want to throw in?
I still support Too Ash, Too Furious.
Okay.
Yeah, that was on the list for me, and then also Cool Ghoul Duel.
Okay. Ben, how about you?
I did not write any down.
Okay. I have four. Hero Hair. 10 Chocobo Scalps. Pop the Radio Stack. The Bourbon Rose. What's everybody think?
I kind of like Hero Hair.
I kind of like Too Ash, Too Furious.
I kind of like that one.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning that way.
Okay.
Because look, even though it's a ripoff of Too Fast, Too Furious, it will be something that clearly defines what the episode is.
Okay. I dig. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I will put all of them in the Slack anyway. So
soon we're gonna have to open up a category for best non-chosen title.
Oh man, I really should be keeping those, but they're at the end of every episode, so we could with a couple hours work actually get them. So
yeah.
It's sort of like all the people, you know, you see the movies that's, you know, by, you know, the director of, you know, the Academy Award winning, and then you have the people where it's by Academy Award nominated.
Yep. Yeah. We call them the nommies.
The nommies. Yeah.